people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and fought and died to be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the real life, I'm fighting in a fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walk in on the fight beside me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run it down my country, man, you walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. I'm not generally a great fan of Preston Manning. He was the founder of the Reform Party, and I think in many ways, particularly genuine immigration reform, deterred real populism. But anyway, I'll leave that aside. He wrote an interesting column for the National Post on Monday called How to Redeem Cancel Culture. Secularism infused with the doctrines of political correctness and identity politics is now the established religion in much of the Western world. I like that idea of the secular cultural Marxism or political correctness, and I might also add, but he wouldn't because he's a tremendous Zionist, the new religion of Holocaust. But anyway, back to Preston's article. He says it bears some religions to the resemblance of the religions it's displaced, but its practices also raise some troubling questions. What if the moral code it seeks to impose is flawed, prejudiced, tainted with hypocrisy, or unjust in some way, so as to rob it of any real moral authority? And even if one accepts the legitimacy of its moral code, you know, like anti-racism and stuff, is it not deficient in one most important aspect? Its apparent failure to provide any concrete means whereby those judged guilty of violating its moral code can be redeemed and restored back to the community. But first, the similarities. 21st century secularism, like its, he says, Judeo-Christian, I would say just Christian, predecessors, because Judaism and Christianity are very, very different, has its list of thou shalt nots. Those, thou shalt not express personal religious values in the public square. Thou shalt not emit greenhouse gases. He's right on that one. See Justin Trudeau's sermons on climate change. Thou shalt not speak disparagingly of minorities. See the denunciations by the CBC and others of hockey commentator Don Cherry's reference to new Canadians as those people. And the list goes on, he says. Also, like its predecessors, secularism, infused with political correctness and identity politics, prescribes severe, though modernized, penalties for violations of its moral code. Instead of physical stoning in the public square, we now have a virtual stoning on social media. To the levying of fines on economic miscreants, we have now added targeted taxation, such as carbon taxes, on such miscreants. And whereas incarceration was once the principal means of isolating violators of the moral code from the rest of the community, today we have virtual shunning and permanent banishment of alleged violators, such as Mr. Cherry, from the online public square. There was one other regrettable similarity between the secular religion and those it has largely replaced, and that is the pernicious prevalence of hypocrisy among some of its most vocal and visible leaders and teachers. Hypocrisy among the leadership of any religion often being its most repulsive feature. Ironically, while the sins that even contemporary Christians most frequently denounce are those associated with sexual immorality or economic exploitation, the sin that Jesus of Nazareth himself most frequently and vehemently denounced was the hypocrisy of the religious elites of his time. In our day, the personal lifestyles, private jets and monstrous homes of the denouncers of greenhouse gas emissions far too often contradict their public posturing. And that is so true. Those who once protested against the confining of people to the private closet because of their sexual orientation now are frequently in the forefront of calling for the confinement of persons with a religious orientation to the same closet. In other words, all the criticism leveled at the former Conservative Party leader, Andrew Scheer, for his personal opposition to same-sex marriage and to abortion, even though he said that those would not color how he would operate as a prime minister. But just the very fact he had those views and they were known was enough to bring heaps of condemnation upon him. Those who have criticized the old residential school system run by churches for using schools as religious indoctrination centers, or you might say also teaching centers rather than just indoctrination, are now often in the forefront of turning our public schools into political indoctrination centers, and they are. I mean, in many public schools across Canada, you get the kids are subjected to non-stop cultural Marxist indoctrination. But now to the most apparent deficiency of secularism as a religion, the absence of any explicit provision for redeeming and restoring to acceptance by the community those judged guilty of violating its moral code. In Christendom, if one violated the moral code and confessed to having done so, personal acceptance of the self-sacrificial death of Christ as atonement for such violations, again, provided a path of redemption for the violator and restoration of relations with the community. Even in hockey, if one breaks the rules but serves the prescribed penalty, one can usually return to the ice in the game. But with political correctness, and this is my take, perhaps not Preston Manning's, the option is almost always what you call the nuclear option. That is the complete destruction, as far as it lies within the power of those objecting to do so. For instance, Don Cherry, the hockey commentator and former coach, who'd been 37 years the feature of Coach's Corner on Hockey Night in Canada, was axed within 48 hours of having urged people to support the poppy drive on for Remembrance Day, and had referred to you people who come to this country and enjoy our wealth and our freedoms and all that. Urge them to spend a few bucks and show respect and all to the veterans. But that's all he said. In fact, taking its context, this was perhaps a clumsily worded admonition to everybody, not just to immigrants. Anyway, you might say, well, perhaps that could have opened up a debate. Perhaps, and I've suggested this several times since, why, if there really were immigrants who were aggrieved, and I'm not sure there were, I think much of the outrage came from social justice warriors who were not even themselves immigrants. But be that as it may, if there really was some hurt feeling, if there really was an immigrant group that could say, look, we strongly support veterans and almost every one of our members wears a poppy. Now, hypothetically, and I suggest it is hypothetical, but hypothetically, supposing there were some Nepalese Canadian people in Canada, and with a strong affinity for that amazing fighting unit that was in the British Army, namely the Gurkhas, and if, and again, these are all ifs, if the Nepalese community were very proud of these of their martial history, and almost every one of them wore a poppy, well then, all they would have to have done would have been to ask for a meeting with Don Cherry and say, look, you know, not all newcomers are lax about wearing the poppy. Look, this is what our community does. And very likely out of this would have come a glowing tribute on the next Saturday Hockey Night in Canada from Don Cherry. In fact, they would have won a friend. Now, but what was the reaction? And again, this was hypothetical. I don't know knowledge if there really was much of a Nepalese community. There probably isn't. But what was the reaction? Not some sort of reconciliation or Don was wrong, but you know, maybe we could set him straight. It was destroy him. And that's what the social justice warriors want. Well, Don Cherry fired. And indeed he was fired. And the organizations that he had served loyally, the NHL, the National Hockey League, his corporate sponsor, Coors, beer, and most hurtfully, the Royal Canadian Legion, for whom he had raised money with his repeated public stands in favor of veterans and the poppies. He wasn't being paid for this. This wasn't a paid commercial. He did this because he really believed, or you might say, out of his idealism or the goodness of his heart. They flung him under the bus so fast. With comments like, his values, he does not represent the diversity of the Legion. His comments are divisive. I've always thought, now that is one of the lamest, emptiest, most cowardly accusations against anybody. You're being divisive or divisive. What's that mean? Well, anytime you say you support one thing, People who support a different thing may disagree. Is that being divisive? I guess it is. But if that's the case, you could never say anything that anybody would take any exception to. In other words, almost all commentary would be silenced. Now, what they mean when they say divisive is that you have criticized a privileged group. Anyway, back to Preston Manning, who has picked up on this notion that there's no program, but possibility of forgiveness or reconciliation. If you are a dissident, or in this case, a sinner, you must be destroyed. And usually that means you're fired, removed from your job. The ultimate penalty in our society, short of incarceration or execution. Well, that's probably not in the cards of Canada to be physically executed, but it's almost that. It seeks the ruination of a person. This is a very grim, humorless, twisted ideology. Anyway, Preston Manning concludes, but what does secularism, especially when infused with doctrines of political correctness and identity politics, have to offer in this regard? That is, for redemption. Apparently nothing but permanent banishment, a one-way trip to our equivalent of Hades. Surely a religion which proclaims tolerance and inclusiveness, and it does. Those are among the, I hate this term, core values of cultural Marxism, inclusiveness and diversity, but not inclusion of dissent and no diversity of opinion. Anyway, he goes on to say, espouses inclusiveness as one of its distinguishing features of its creed, but seems to be unable to offer some path to redemption to those it condemns and excludes. But what is the path, and where is the evidence of it actually being offered to the Don Cherries of this world? In fact, there is no evidence of that. Well, here's one of those cases where you don't know whom to cheer for, item in today's National Post headline: Hasidic couple sue over inadequate education. Okay, what's the story here? A former Hasidic, they're an extreme form of extreme sect of Judaism. You know, the ones with the earlocks and the fur sombreros and the frock coats. Anyway, a former Hasidic Jewish couple who were educated in a private religious school graduated without knowing how to speak French and hardly being able to speak English, a lawyer said Monday in the opening of a trial centering on the Quebec government's responsibility to regulate religious schools. So they voluntarily, or at least their parents chose to send them to this Hasidic or religious school, where they got not much of an education. They learned it all in Yiddish. They live in Quebec, and French is the working language of Quebec. Well, they knew almost no French at all, and very little English. So they got a really bad education. Whose fault would that be? Well, my book, the fault is their parents and the school, not the government of Quebec, which allows these schools to operate. We want our own weirdo religious schools, but when they screw up and fail to provide us with an education, it's your fault. No, it's their fault. But anyway, these litigious people are in court. The couple were in a Quebec Superior Court on Monday seeking a judgment against the province, which they accused of failing to ensure that they received an adequate education. Well, what about their own parents? Bruce Johnson, the lawyer representing Yachanon Lowen and Clara Wasserstein, told a Montreal courtroom that the couple received almost no secular education while attending a school run by the ultra-Orthodox Tash community in Boisbriand, north of Montreal. Yeah, but that's the fault of their school, though, isn't it? Not the province. According to court documents, the plaintiffs were educated in Yiddish at a religious school that did not hold a permit. They never got a single history, geography, science, or art class, while Loma never attended a French class. So basically, they're simply taught nonstop religion. But that was their choice. You can't make that choice and then say, well, I didn't get an education. It's your fault. No, it's their fault. Or perhaps more accurately, their parents. The plaintiffs finished their high school education without knowing about the St. Lawrence River or the theory of evolution, reads the summary of their statement of claim originally filed 4 years ago. Court filings say that Lowen and Wasserstein were left unprepared to integrate into Quebec society when they left the community in 2010 and had struggled to find work without recognized high school diplomas. Yeah, I mean, they're crippled, and that's sad. But they ought to be going after their parents. You see, they've left the community, and once they're out of that community, that little incestuous group of people that all speak the same language with exactly the same religion is no longer there. On one level, one can be sympathetic, but it's not the state's fault. The couple who are also go by Johannen and Schifrat Lowen. What are people just changing their names? Okay. want to prevent future generations from suffering what they suffered. As I say, it's one of those situations. It's kind of hard to know what side to come down. Well, the ongoing failure of political will and law enforcement continues, mostly across the country. The Native Indians and their social justice some Indians and their social justice white supporters have been having a merry time blocking transportation. We are now into the seventh day of a blockade of the main east-west railway along Lake Ontario that carries a lot of commercial goods and, of course, passengers from Toronto to Ottawa and Montreal. Members of the Mohawks at Thayendanegea, which is near Belleville, Ontario, have blocked the railway. And wouldn't you know, nobody's responsible. Well, actually, everybody's kicking the ball into somebody else's court. The federal government, which is responsible for rail transportation, the minister in charge of that, Mark Garneau, today said enforcement is a provincial responsibility. So, okay, the Office of the Premier of Ontario, what are you doing about it? What about clearing the tracks, clearing these natives who have blocked the track with a large vehicle, and there are a few natives beside it. They're not actually sitting down on the track, but they blocked the track. Okay. So what's the province doing about it? Well, the Solicitor General for the Province of Ontario says that's the responsibility of the OPP, that's the Ontario Provincial Police. Okay, well, they're the frontline people, but the Solicitor General could give them an order. But everybody says, well, I'm not really responsible. We want to keep police independence. Yeah, on the exact, tactics and so on. You leave that in the hands of the expert. But the politicians have to call the shots. Anyway, according to the Solicitor General of Ontario, that's up to the OPP. According to the OPP, wait a sec, what's that word they always use? It means sitting on your butt and doing nothing. That's right, they're monitoring the situation. I see they've been monitoring it for 7 days, which means sitting around watching it. not doing anything, they're monitoring it. Well, gee, what are you getting your salary for? Monitoring, watching it, watching the Indians occupy something that is not theirs. There's even been a court injunction against them. The police normally enforce an injunction. If you were a factory, you got an injunction against a group of people that were blocking the entrance to your factory. Normally, the police would enforce that. They would go to the people blocking the entrance and saying, here's a court order. You are not supposed to be here blocking the entrance. You must leave. And if they said, we are not leaving, the police would then say to them, well, you've got 5 minutes to pick up your bits and pieces and leave, or else we will arrest you. Okay, why is that not done with the Mohawks? Well, unfortunately, over the past 20 years, there has been an increasing hands-off. When natives misbehave, they're a privileged group. We don't want to confront them because there could be violence. Well, if there's violence, it's their fault. If on my hypothetical factory situation, if those blocking the entrance decided to try to punch out the police, they would perhaps be pepper sprayed or nightsticked or whatever and arrested. And there might be some injuries. But that's on them for refusing to obey the law. And what this signals is that there are minorities in our country above the law. That's a bad sign. So anyway, the rail boycott, the railway blockage continues. What should be done? Well, in my opinion, wait till 3 or 4 in the morning. There aren't very many Indians down there. Bring in the necessary equipment and the necessary show of force. You don't even have to ask the Indians permission. Drag or remove the blockage from the railway tracks and immediately start moving the trains on through, especially the freight trains that are not necessarily on an exact schedule, as are the passenger trains. And any of the natives hanging around the tracks will have to be moved, told to move back, whatever the safety zone is. CN Rail has said, even though there are actually no Indians physically blocking the tracks, they're fairly close to it, and there's a matter of safety. Well, no, there isn't a matter of safety. You warn them, you tell them, a train is coming through. Now, you move back or it's on you. You know, various obstreperous minorities have read the political lay of the land fairly accurately. We are ruled by collaborators and pussies, people either too morally weak to uphold law and order, or essentially collaborators. They essentially agree they buy into the cultural Marxist victimhood nonsense perpetrated by various minorities, including the Native Indians. Now, you've got to understand, this blockage of the railway tracks near Belleville, Ontario, has nothing to do with the local Mohawks. They're not protesting something happening to them. They're actually in solidarity with the Wet'suwet'en. I keep wanting to say wet pants, but the Wet'suwet'en, it's spelled in a way you'd never recognize, but you sound it out as Wet'suwet'en. And they want to block a pipeline going through northern BC. That's the Coastal Gas Link, which is carrying natural gas from Dawson Creek, BC to the port of Kitimat. Now, this is all very confusing because actually the elected bands within the Wet'suwet'en tribe approve of the pipeline. They've even made deals with the Coastal Gas Link, they're going to get a fair deal of money and employment, all those good things. That's nice. But the hereditary chiefs, for reasons that certainly have never been explained to me and I don't understand, they disagree with that. So some of the Wet'suwet'en, the elected leadership, the ones that I would say who have real legitimacy, are in favor of this. So everybody's on side. But the hereditary chiefs are against it. Now, of course, they have been joined in this cause by the fanatics of the radical environmental movement, the climate change warriors. And when I say climate change, I mean those who link changes in climate to human behavior. Now, you know, we could argue all day about climate change in the sense that because climate is slightly different this year than it was last year, let's say the winter's a little warmer or the summer is a little shorter, is that climate change? I'd say no. There will be slight changes from year to year. However, you would have a climate change when there's a pattern, and at times there are patterns. For instance, in the Midwest, through much of the 1930s, and this was consistent year after year, the climate was very dry and very hot. Hence the Dust Bowl. Some of the soil dried out. Strong storm winds came along and blew all the topsoil away. There was climate change for a period of time. And then it changed again. Well, anyway, that may seem like perhaps needlessly complex. What is really important is there a human factor? That does climate change because of man? Well, I'd say science says no. The radical social justice warriors and environmentalists say yes. We are to blame. Of course, that as I mentioned on a number of previous shows, it brings you to some impossible contradictions. At one point, the party line was, the world is warming up, global warming, and it's all our fault. Or as grim little Greta Thunberg would say, how dare you? It's all our fault. How's that? Well, we generate carbon dioxide through the internal combustion engine and coal-fired plants, etc., etc. Carbon dioxide is bad, and it's leading to global warming. Well, actually, carbon dioxide is good. Plants use that as one of the nutrients to create life. It's not bad. Carbon dioxide is actually good. It has something to do with global warming. Well, of course, that guilt theory falls apart when you look over the history of the last 1,000 years. And just to be very brief about it, somewhere around the year 900, Europe warmed up a bit. And that allowed some of the ice cap to melt, and the Vikings were able to to punch their way across the North Atlantic from Scandinavia to the Faroe Islands, to Iceland, to Greenland, and to North America. Okay, so global warming is the result of human behavior. Well, what have we suddenly done that created this? Well, there were no automobiles, jet engines, coal-fired plants. Well, then it cooled off in the late Middle Ages. And Viking exploration stopped. By Shakespeare's time, you could skate on the Thames. We know that because we've got paintings of people doing that. So, okay, what led to the cooling? In fact, we've had ups and downs, warming, cooling, through that period, from then to present day. Well, if increased human generation of hydrocarbons is the cause, surely there would be an upward curve of the world warming up. And instead, there isn't. There just isn't. So human cause of global warming is just one big falsehood. Finally, after a number of days, the police in Vancouver have hauled away social justice warriors that were blocking the entrance to the port of Vancouver, preventing workers from getting in. That should not have been allowed for 5 minutes. The right to pass on a public thoroughfare, whether it's a sidewalk or a road, should be inviolate. And any group of thugs that want to prevent that should be quickly dispersed and or arrested. Well, they finally were. But that's caused economic damage. People have not been able to go to work. People have not been paid for their work. I mean, these are not victimless crimes. Oh, yes, in Toronto. On Monday, some more thugs blocked a major intersection for a few hours before they finally either got too cold or buzzed off. Once again, rotten policing. That should not have been permitted for a minute to block the side of the roads. I mean, downtown Toronto is already a zoo of traffic gridlock, largely because of immigration. Well, more exactly, largely because of mass immigration and the failure of government to honestly acknowledge immigration if we're going to successfully accommodate hordes of people more will require the massive expansion of infrastructure. And actually, that's what costs a lot of money. So immigration is not it grows the economy. No, it doesn't grow the economy. It imposes severe demands on the economy, which our feckless politicians have failed to meet. Okay. So the police failed in Toronto. The National Post interviews some people involved in these protests. In Ottawa, Sophia, a protester who didn't want her last name used, told the Post about 20 people had occupied the Ministry of Justice building in solidarity with the Wet'suwet'en. The group hoped that several requests would be fulfilled, including upholding the obligations of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Yes, those meddlers of the UN, and we'd signed on to this ridiculous protocol, have said that we have to shut down major pipelines because they violate the concerns and rights or interests of Native people, even though many Native groups are on side with these projects. We shouldn't be taking instructions from the UN. But anyway, I love this. Sophia, a protester who didn't want to, your last name used, why not? You're a protester. This is, of course, the cowardice. Yeah, you can be really, really mouthy when you don't use it anyway. If you really believe in something, set your name to it. I do. Sophia continued. Very simply, if Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs have said no to the an extractive resource project on their territories, then they should be able to say no to whatever they like, Sophia said. The RCMP actively arresting and detaining people on their own lands is not what I call reconciliation. Well, the RCMP have finally, after over a month, begun to remove barriers to a remote construction site in the Houston area of north central British Columbia. And let's look at this twit. Anonymous tweet, Sophia says. Very simply, if the Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs have said no to an extractive resource project on their territories, then they should be able to say no to whatever they like. Really? Really? First of all, it's not an extractive project on their territory. The extraction of natural gas occurs way outside of Wet'suwet'en territory. All it is moving that gas via pipeline across their territory. So the hereditary chiefs who are in conflict with the elected Indian officials should have an absolute veto? In what parallel universe does this occur?
Now, Sophia is entirely entitled to her opinion, but federal finance minister Bill Moreau was in Calgary, and following a talk he gave on Monday, he told reporters he felt police were dealing with this in an appropriate manner. I hate that politically correct term, appropriate. What does it mean? Well, it means I approve of it. So the police are dealing with it in an appropriate manner. No, they're not dealing with it. They're doing nothing. And it's already having an impact on our economy. Canadian National Railway's main line, which is blocked in Belleville, near Belleville, has caused what they call a severe impact to operations by preventing the movement of consumer goods, propane, grain, lumber, and steel across the country. So they're actually, this boycott that's now almost into it's now on the seventh day, is causing a real impact. Once again, this is the utter cowardice of our authorities. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Well, let's do something a little bit more upbeat. I'm going to play some German Ratzkeller, I should say Hofbrauhaus music, some German drinking music. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
I'm frozen in this time. I'm frozen in this time.
Thank you.
Paul Fromm, you're on the fighting side of me. Back to the game tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign out tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave, our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.